Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. The food industry is up in arms over a move by the Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, to label added sugars on packaged items. The proposal is a modest one, which would simply list how many teaspoons of extra sugar the food contains. Among those howling against the measure is the cranberry juice industry, which contends that cranberries are so bitter that companies are forced to add a lot of sugar to make them palatable. Currently, nutrition labels must list how many grams of total sugar are in a product, those naturally occurring and those that are added. Ingredient lists also reveal how much sugar has been added, but companies in recent years have used obscure-sounding substitutes, such as high-fructose corn syrup, concentrated fruit juice, and dextrose. The sugar industry has also made major news recently when historical documents from the 1960s and 70s were discovered, revealing the close collusion between sugar manufacturers and the National Institutes of Health. The documents reveal how the sugar lobby pushed for dentists to recommend alternative preventative measures against tooth decay rather than the obvious one of controlling sugar in the diet. The so-called sugar papers are being likened to the tobacco papers. My guest is Dr. Michael Goran. He is a professor of preventative medicine, physiology, and biophysics and pediatrics, the Dr. Robert C. and Veronica Atkins Endowed Chair in Childhood Obesity and Diabetes, co-director of the USC Diabetes and Obesity Research Center, and director of the Childhood Obesity Research Center at the Keck School of Medicine at the University of Southern California. He's also the co-editor of the book Dietary Sugars and Health. Welcome to Uprising, Dr. Michael Goran.
Thank you. Good morning.
Now, on the issue of the sugar papers, the researchers who discovered the sugar industry's role in influencing dental advice found that, quote, the sugar industry funded research in collaboration with allied food industries on enzymes to break up dental plaque and a vaccine against tooth decay. So they were looking for anything but advising eating less sugar. How do you respond to the sugar papers? Were you surprised to learn this?
Yes. Yeah. On the one hand, yes. On the other hand, no. I think there's a, there's a history of other similar situations where the sugar industry or the food industry in general has tried to alter government strategies on food policy. It's not the first time.
Right. And of course, dentists know that eating sugar impacts your teeth. But sugar doesn't just impact our teeth. It impacts our entire bodies. Let's turn to the issue of the labeling. Andrew Briscoe of the Sugar Association doesn't want added sugars to be labeled on packaged foods because, according to him, quote, the lack of science to justify added sugar labeling sets an alarming precedent. Is there really a lack of science? Michael? Can you hear me, Michael? Okay, we're going to try to call Michael Goran right back. We just lost his audio, and we're talking about the sugar papers as well as a new proposal by the Food and Drug Administration to label added sugars on packaged foods. Currently, there is labeling, of course, but it's in small lettering on the back, and it doesn't necessarily reveal always what sugars are added. Michael Goran, are you with us?
Yes, I'm okay. Here. Can
so,
you hear me?
Yes, we can. So Andrew Briscoe says that there's a surprising, that there's a lack of science to justify added sugar labeling. Is there indeed a lack of science?
No, I wouldn't think so. There's plenty of evidence. I mean, certainly it's debatable like any science, but there is several lines of strong evidence linking added sugars to cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and obesity. Mm. In fact, the one clear bias that exists is that studies that are funded or associated with the food and beverage industry tend to not find an association, whereas studies not funded do find an association.
And let's explicitly just come out and say it, the problems with sugar in our diet, how do you link those to when you talk to lay people about the effects that sugar have, particularly on children, since I know that's part of your specialty? What effects do they have on the bodies of human beings enough to justify looking at sugar in the diet as a public health concern?
Well, yes. I mean, I think there's multiple reasons to be concerned. So the straight obvious one is related to the excess calories provided by sugary beverages with in the absence of additional nutrients. So that alone contributes to additional calories. And then aside from the effect of the additional calories, we know that the way sugar is metabolized in the body, that it can lead to detrimental effects, independent of the effects on obesity. For example, fructose, for example, which is the main component of sucrose and is much higher in high fructose corn syrup and in fruit juices, fructose has separate and unique effects on the body because of the special way in which it is metabolized and causes many disruptions that lead to chronic disease risk.
And you mentioned fruit juice. This is really interesting because, of course, people today consider juices as very healthy. One of my coworkers just yesterday bought a juice bottle of vegetables and fruits called Green Machine by the company Naked, which boasted no added sugars. You know, they say no added sugars right on the front, and it shows this lovely photo of green veggies and fruits. But when I read the nutrition list, I saw 53 grams of sugar in this 15-ounce bottle of juice. That's almost double what's in a can of Coke. The top four ingredients by weight were apple juice, mango puree, pineapple juice, and banana puree, and the last ingredient was kale. What do you tell people who drink these green juices?
Well, this is going to be a very contentious issue when people start to realize that these juices contain so much sugar, as you point out. My advice is to try and eat fruit rather than drink it, and the same for vegetables. So that. Also, we don't really know whether or not the juicing with the added sugars, whether there's any other components in the juices like fibers left over or other micronutrients that may offset some of the effects of the sugars. That's an unknown. But I think it's a very difficult issue because of the mixed effect of juice. Vegetables sounds like it's healthy, but in fact, it's loaded with sugars that are not added sugars. They're just a natural sugar. So makes it very complicated to explain to the public.
Hmm. Well, I mentioned a can of Coke, which actually by itself has about at least 8 teaspoons, a little over 8 teaspoons of sugar. And there was another sugar-related controversy recently when it was discovered that Coca-Cola was found to be paying health writers and bloggers and dietitians to suggest cans of mini Coke as a, quote, healthy snack. They were writing these suggestions as part of pieces for American Heart Month, of all things. How do you respond to that? I mean, a can of Coke has 8 1/4 teaspoons of sugar, but the mini can of Coke has 5 teaspoons of sugar, which is mm-hmm. still a lot.
Yes, and can add up pretty quickly.
A healthy snack? I mean, would you ever call it a healthy snack?
No. I think the tactics used by the beverage industry and the beverage alliance groups are very. What's the word? Are very concerning.
Deceptive, unconscionable, deceptive, unethical.
Yes.
I'll come up with a bunch of words.
Yes, I'll let you say it.
and it's interesting because there have been a lot of efforts to alert the public to the sugar problems and the amounts of sugar in our food. In California, there was a bill that would have added a warning label to sodas, heavily lobbied against by the industry, and it failed. In New York, the city was trying to ban supersized sodas. That was struck down by a court. And now, of course, the FDA, as I mentioned, is trying to label added sugars. Do you support these sorts of efforts? Is this a public health issue that could begin to address the epidemics of diabetes and obesity in this country?
Yeah, I support the California labeling strategy, which that bill, by the way, has been reintroduced and will be up again for discussion this year. I support that because it's very it's very benign and it doesn't cost anybody anything. I mean, I also support the soda taxes, but there's good arguments against that because of the economic impact. The labeling doesn't cost anybody anything, and it's just a warning label that says consumption of excess added sugars may contribute to dental disease, obesity, and diabetes. And I don't think it's hard to argue with that statement based on the current science. And it's just simply a warning label to warn consumers who can then make their own decision as to whether they want to make that consumption or not.
Now, many people who do try to avoid sugar and high fructose corn syrup, which has gotten a bad rap in the past few years, they opt for these so-called natural sugars. There's a move among health food companies to list natural cane sugar and natural cane juice, and tout it as something healthy. For example, the Hansen's brand soda sold at health food stores say we use cane sugar in our cane sugar sodas rather than high fructose corn syrup, and they boast that made with real cane sugar. But people are also opting for honey sweetened foods, and there's new fads like coconut sugar and agave nectar. Is there any difference between any of these, or are they all just sugar in disguise and should be avoided?
Well, on the one hand, yes, sugar is sugar, and there's not much difference between the different sugars, but there is a little bit of a hierarchy in that. Natural cane sugar, which is sucrose, does not have as much fructose as high fructose corn syrup. And the more fructose, the more the risk and the more the potential damage on the body's systems. So there is a slight benefit. So, if you tied me down and had me consume either natural cane sugar soda or high fructose corn syrup soda, yeah, and I had to make the choice, I would choose the worst of the two evils. But it still comes down to, at the end of the day, that we as a society are consuming too much added sugars, sugars in general, and these contribute to the rising epidemics of chronic diseases.
Now, many people have been aware of the ill effects of sugar and have switched to diet drinks, which use artificial sweeteners. But there was just a report out a few days ago at the University of Texas Health Science Center that found that people over age 65 who drink diet soda daily tend to expand their waistlines by much more than those who prefer other beverages. So basically, those who drank diet sodas actually gained weight. Now, of course, I understand this is an observational study, not a controlled experiment, so you can't say there's necessarily causation. But as far as you know, can switching to diet drinks actually make you fat?
Well, the data is pretty mixed. There's also studies on the other side of the coin that show that they can help you lose or maintain weight over time. That was a recent study from last year. But worse is that we don't really know what the long-term chronic effects of these alternative sugars are on the body. During growth and development, for example. So I think we have a lot to learn about the effects of these compounds in the body, and there's emerging data that shows that some of these compounds can contribute to metabolic abnormalities. Mm.
Finally, we had recently discussed the effects of grains in our bodies, grains like wheat and rice. Aren't grains also converted to sugars in our body? They're broken down into glucose pretty rapidly. Should we also be treating grains in a similar vein as we treat sugars?
Well, on the one hand, yes. I mean, it's quite correct that starch is broken down rapidly in the body to release glucose, which is absorbed. There's a slight difference in that there is some kind of inbuilt regulation because of the way it's released over time. So ultimately, it depends on how much you consume. And the problem with sugary beverages is that you can consume a lot very rapidly, and it doesn't need to be metabolized. It just gets absorbed very quickly into the body where it has its effects. So it's about the dose over time and the rate of delivery into the body.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Michael Goran, for joining us today and helping shed some light on these issues.
Thank you for asking me to join you today.
Dr. Michael Goran is a professor of preventative medicine and physiology and biophysics and pediatrics and the Dr. Robert C. and Veronica Atkins Endowed Chair in Childhood Obesity and Diabetes at the University of Southern California.